I want to begin with a story. And the story is basically that Srimati Radharani is deeply absorbed in love for Krishna. Because for her, there is nothing else in the world. Her love for Krishna is exclusive. She has only one goal in life, a spiritual goal. It's not mixed. She doesn't use her spirituality to kind of obtain blessings or obtaining things in this world. She just is only interested in Krishna. And without Krishna, nothing has meaning to her. So sometimes Krishna, to fan the attachment of his devotee, is temporarily disappearing. Then, in that mood, the devotee's attachment to Krishna is even increasing more. So in such a state, Srimati Radharani was in Vrindavan on the banks of the Yamuna, and this was a situation that needed relief. So various of her assistants, gopis, who are also lovers of Krishna, but not as deep as she is, they were fanning Srimati Radharani. When Lalita, Radharani's close and dearmost principal servant, Lalita is elder than Srimati Radharani, and Lalita is practically, therefore, like a guru, one who is, when Lalita says no, then that's it, no one can argue. So Lalita's authority is very great. And Lalita went to the Yamuna, and there she saw this swan. And she felt that this swan would be the perfect messenger to send to Krishna. Yes. To let Krishna know, who's now in Mathura, and this swan can go down the river and go to the city of Mathura and there meet Krishna and tell Krishna to come soon, because it can't go on in this way. So here we're seeing a situation where the topmost and pure devotees, who are always absorbed in pure love of God, are looking upon a conditioned soul, a swan, a pious soul, a soul with good qualities, but a conditioned soul nonetheless, someone of this world. And the saintly person in the form of Lalita looked upon this this soul and was thinking, this soul would be the ideal messenger. This swan would be the ideal messenger, and if somehow or other I could inspire this swan to go, then this would be the greatest thing that the swan could do with its life. Meanwhile, the swan was there, paddling in the water of the Yamuna, and it was not quite clear whether that swan was really going to take up that mission. Not at all. So Lalita was sort of judging the situation, and it looked as if the swan was undecided. So Lalita then started to bring in some incentive. And she said, you know, this Yamuna takes you to the city of Mathura. That city of Mathura is quite amazing. Quite amazing. It is very opulent. There in Mathura, there is a palace which is of such beauty you cannot imagine. And there is a terrace, a roof terrace. And on that roof terrace, on two columns, There are two crystal swans. Crystal swans. So they call the swan, of course, heard swans. Oh, that's interesting. Ah, yes. Naturally, yes. Swans, you know. That's about, yeah, about my race, you know, me. Swans. So immediately the attention of the swan was again awoken. And Alita continued, crystal swan. Oh, crystal swan. That must be amazing. Amazing. Such a huge crystal swan. The swan's curiosity had now been awoken. Then Lalita described other things that the swan would see on the way. Said there is an amazing place named Akshayvat. And in this Akshayvat, you can rest for a little while. Because that is a place where Krishna, Krishna once resided in a tree. And if you look carefully, you can see that this tree is reminding of Vishnu. When you will sit in that tree, surely, surely, you will remember the Supreme Lord. Then Lalita said to the swan, all you need to do is just follow the way that Krishna went, and you will attain perfection. So in this way, we see how Lalita, as the guru, is instructing the swan who represents the conditioned soul. And although that conditioned soul was initially chosen for the highest mission, the mission in the service of the pure devotees of the Lord, there was some hesitancy. Because after all, that swan had also its own life. Therefore, Lalita said, you know, that Srimati Radharani is loving Krishna dearly, and now she can no longer continue to live without him. Then she said to the swan, I'm sure you can understand, think of the condition of your swan mate, and how you too would feel like that. So Lalita was in various ways dealing with this newcomer, relating to the mundane emotions that swan was experiencing, so that swan could be motivated to become a servant, instead of trying to live its own life and paddle around in the river on its own destiny. And no, swans are meant for a higher purpose. But oh, only few will become messengers. In this way, Rupa Goswami takes us along in his Hansa Dutta and is looking for a messenger between Krishna and his devotee. This Dutta genre is something that developed in West Bengal, and different duttas, different messengers were chosen. One poet wrote about the Manasa Dutta, where the mind became the messenger between the devotee and the Supreme Lord. And the mind going up and down, and the mind preparing itself to become a suitable messenger. Not easy. Again, we find reluctance. Again, we find holding back. Again, we find a personal agenda. And in this way, we find in these stories the issue of spiritual life. Our self-centeredness that takes us away from truly the higher spiritual experience. Curiosity, yes, is awoken, undoubtedly. There are things That sounds wonderful. But can we actually put our own agenda aside? Will we have the faith? What if we give up? What if we give up the happiness that is available to us in this world, in the hope that we will attain something higher? But what if we don't attain it? Then we have nothing. Then we have lost the material and at the same time the spiritual was never attained. Therefore, steady wins the race. Not too revolutionary. Hold on to security. Hold on to what we have and wait and see. Let's first get some deeper experience. Then we'll let go. Then we'll let go of the lower things.
Yes.
Let the higher things manifest. And then the time, then it's early enough to cut the bondage, to cut the rope to all the material comforts, which are so good, but temporary, as we know. But they're good as long as they last, after all. So, in this way, the duttas, the messengers, are sent for a higher purpose, a greater purpose, a purpose of sacrifice, a purpose for the eternal, a purpose, the path of the Lord, the instrument, to be the perfect instrument. To be the perfect instrument. But what will happen? What will happen? In the same way, Srila Prabhupada, our guru, our teacher, once in his old age in India, was thinking how to make it to the Western world. His own teacher had asked him long before to go and teach in the Western world, but somehow or other it had not come to pass due to family responsibilities and other things, a family, four children, and so many things to look after. So time had moved along, and only when he was aging did he have the time for spiritual life. And only then time moved on, and only then it took quite a number of years. But at age 69, he managed to convince the owner of a shipping line, the Sindhya's shipping line, to allow him passage across the Atlantic to the United States. So, on the ship, he celebrated his 70th birthday. And when the ship, somehow or other, it was a rough journey, and his health was going through major crisis, but he survived. Even heart attacks, made it. And when the ship anchored on the pier in New York, at that time, he wrote a poem. And in that poem, the poem was called Markine Bhagavad Dharma. Markine, referring to the American subcontinent. And that now, Bhagavad Dharma, the pure service to the Supreme Lord, would come to the United States of America. And just as Lalita was thinking, how will this swan listen to me? Prabhupada was also thinking, how will these American people listen to me? I'm going to tell them that they should not eat eat meat. America, you know, it's like the land of, well, beef and beer. Okay? I mean, how can we tell them, right? No beef, no beer. Right? America, the land of great wealth, where men and women are like gods, like demigods, living in the greatest comforts, biggest cars, V8s roaring down the road. America. We had the West Side Story. Don't know, it's of course a bit before your time, but still there was a song, 'cause I wanna be in America. Everything's free in America. America, America. So the American dream has certainly touched the world, without a doubt. America. So Prabhupada was there with his own dream. And he was saying, what am I going to say to these people? How can I convince them? Why would they listen to me? An old man from India. I mean, who's going to listen to me? Prabhupada was saying. He said, but all I can do is repeat your words. And then he began to recite some verses from the scripture. And he included that in his song that he wrote, these verses. And then he continued his song. And then in the song he said, I am a Kattira Puttali. I am a wooden doll. Wooden doll means marionette, puppet, right? Puppet on a string. That's me. He said, so now, Amara Nachate. Nacho Nacho Ami, Amara Nachate. Now please, make me dance, as you wish. So here, the marionette model is given to us where the person, where the individual has become the instrument, where the personal agenda has completely disappeared, and where all that's left is a desire to execute the will of the Lord. What is the will of the Lord? There is no doubt. The will of the Lord is to reclaim the conditioned souls. How is that? It is said that the spiritual world is sometimes described as premamritambo. Premamritambo means an ocean of transcendental love. Now, what is that ocean of transcendental love? There are many promises that if you do good in this life, that you will attain heaven or the heavens. There are many concepts in many traditions of heavens. I have seen descriptions of heavens where, like in Europe, where I'm from, the Germanic heavens, Valhalla, provides you with beer forever. Maybe something for Stellenbosch, because at least I was in Stellenbosch and took a picture of a poster which said, sell books, buy beer. I don't know if you know that poster, but I've seen it on campus. I took a picture of it. It was a pretty cool picture. Yes. So there is a heaven for that. There are heavens where one can have many maidens. There are heavens where one can enjoy forever. Of course, there are deeper understandings. Deeper understandings. We find in writings of mystics, they describe about union with God, right? And how in the heavens that kind of experience is there, and that is the stage of perfection. Now, premamritam bhunidhi. What is that ocean of transcendental love? It is the exchange of love between the devotee and the Supreme Lord. It is said that there are no limits to the qualities of God. He's unlimited. Must be. Otherwise, how would he be God? God is unlimitedly great. You cannot limit him. Therefore, there is no end to the discovery. The discovery, therefore, is not ending from, okay, now it took me 60 years, and I grew my beard up to in my knees, but by now, I know God, figured him out, completely, yes. It's evident, it's evident, I would say, dear Watson. what can be said? He's unlimited, unlimited in quality. The lover of God is the self-realized soul. The lover of God had understood, but not only God, because God is the lover of all living beings. It's just like you can't love somebody and not love those that person loves. That doesn't work. If you kick my dog, I'm not going to love you. Right? You kicked my dog, Get out of here. We're enemies. No love now. Right? So love. So the Supreme Lord is the lover of all living beings. Therefore, lover of God includes lover of all living beings. And the lover of God loves the unlimited Supreme Lord. And unlimited means there is no end to the discovery of the qualities of God. So it's, therefore, love of God means an eternal activity, eternally exploring the qualities of God, and then loving those too. What if you love someone really deeply, and then you discover a new quality that you never saw in that person, and you love that too? See, that's love. Otherwise love gets boring. So we're speaking about ever-growing love. So that is there. And then, that love touches the heart of the Supreme Lord. Is he made of stone? Is he one who is denied of sentiment? Is he one who does not love? Then, anybody, if so much love is expressed towards us, would reciprocate with love, naturally. So that's the situation. So as the living beings are discovering the unlimited qualities and glories of the Lord and embracing them with love, he reciprocates and embraces them. And in this way there's an ocean of loving exchanges between the Supreme Lord and all living beings. One Lord who can simultaneously deal with all living beings. And then there's a few who say, interesting all that. Nice for a talk. Kind of. Inspiring for a lecture. Not bad. Not bad at all. But I got to say, it had depth. It had depth. It was kind of entertaining also. It had some nice stories, metaphors, swan and this and that. Started off kind of creative. Wasn't too boring. Was interesting. And then something about love, something deep. but a bit of, a bit airy-fairy, you know? You know what I mean? A bit somewhere there in the clouds. Sort of dreamy, otherworldly, nice and sweet, but, you know, what it's got to do with the real things, you know, the real issues in life, right? We need solutions. We're living in a time, you know, where we need solutions, where we need to, you know, this is a generation that has to stand up in the world and do something about it before it gets out of hand, right? What about that? And are we going to talk about something practical, or are we just going to stay in the, you know, with our head in the clouds and just, you know, dream away? Well, first let us look at the reality and appreciate that we are not in it. Because what is the reality? Stellenbosch for you. And what is Stellenbosch? What was Stellenbosch yesterday and what is it today? What was it 200 years ago? What was it 100 years ago? What was it 10 years ago? What is it now? What will it be tomorrow? It's changing all the times. You know that Heraclitus, you know, and his... And his statement, you cannot step in the same river twice. Everything in the world is always changing and changing and changing and changing, isn't it? Cannot in the morning you look at your face. Good morning, handsome. It's not the same face. Sorry. You see a face that you have never seen before. Overnight, it crept upon you, changes, oh God, subtle ones, but you know, after a while you begin to notice, oh my God, what is that? I never had that. Now you have, you do, it's there, it has come. Change, 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 creeps upon you. There was the movie Shangri-La, I'm sure you heard the story. About that man that went into, found the valley of youth, and it was all wonderful and beautiful, but he felt a little homesick, and then he came out of the valley. And then, you know, you see him in the movie come out of the valley, and he's just like... he's aging like, you know, like 100 years in 10 seconds, or in 1 minute, you know. And you see that on the screen. I mean, I saw it many years ago, and I'm still sort of... when I remember it, I'm still feeling like a cold hand around my heart, because it's happening. So anyway, changes, 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 world of changes. So what is real? What is our reality? What is our reality? You know, I come from a nice place, just outside of Amsterdam, called Heemstede. Nothing ever happens in Heemstede. It's as peaceful can be. You can, you know, even beautiful young ladies can walk alone through a forest in the night and nothing ever happens. Nothing. That's Heemstede. I mean, it's as safe can be anywhere. Right? It's almost boring, that safe. So anyway, and there's nice forest. We have 35-meter high oak trees on the northern side, right? And then towards the south, we have big tulip fields, endless fields with flowers and things and famous gardens like that. To the west, we have sand dunes, and behind it, the sea. And to the east, we have Amsterdam. Just, you know, a perfect mix, right, one might say, from a material point of view. Yes, so I came from that place, and it was nice in many ways, and then, but maybe a little boring. So in due course of time, I went to travel around the world, and life took me far away from that place. And then many years later, I came back. It was maybe at least 25 years had gone by, and I came back to the place where I grew up after 25 years. You know, so I sort of walked, and first I went to the forest where I used to play with my brother, and I remembered the places. And it looked much smaller than I remembered it, you know, because when you're a kid, everything looks really big, right? So, God, it looked smaller, you know. Anyway, I sort of kept on walking and said, well, not too far from here was the house of my uncle. So I walked past the house of my uncle, sort of looked inside if my uncle was still in there, but there were strange people living there, you know, which is sort of weird, right? A house where you used to come and there's these strangers living in the house. Then, you know, there was a cinema where I used to have a little job, you know, when I was still in school, you know, to make some extra money. And then that was no longer a cinema, you know. And then I came past a house where I had lived for a while, and that was broken down. So I started, so this is getting weird, you know, it's getting surrealistic. What kind of movie is this? I mean, every place where I have been is wiped out. It's gone. It's strange. Then I thought to myself, there must be someone here that I know. Maybe someone I went to school with, you know, I just don't recognize him. So I start looking for people of my age, you know, sort of in the street, you know, is there anybody here? It's a small town. I gotta know somebody, 30,000 people. Right? Somebody I gotta know. Nobody. Then suddenly a city bus stopped. Not at the bus stop, but just in the middle of the road. The driver called me over. When I got closer, was an Indian driver. He put his hand in the till, takes out some bills, and says, please, Swamiji, take a donation. That's kind of like, somebody's trying to tell me, don't worry about this, you know, this is not important anymore. This is not your home. Your real home is not here. Your real home is in the spiritual world. And this temporary place where you stayed in the past, see how much it has changed. See what is left now. Now, after 25 years, you don't know anybody. And once, you knew practically the whole town. I knew practically everybody. Yeah. Everybody. Everybody who mattered, I knew. Yeah. Anybody who was somebody, I knew them. Everybody knew everybody. That's how it was in that place. Then, so, let us get the perspective right before we get down to earth. The reality is the eternal world, where we belong. After all, we are eternal beings. The soul within us is eternal. Therefore, our home is in the eternal world, the world of love. All right, let's come down now to the earth. Here we are. I've got my costume, it's all ready to go, you know, it's like blue eyes, blonde hair, okay, now I got glasses, before I didn't, yes, but anyway, with them, I can see you better, yeah, so, no problem whatsoever, I'm ready to enjoy, what else is life for, yes, I'm ready to enjoy, and why would I stop, I've been doing it for a while, and I can still do it. Oh yes, not too old yet, still going strong, yes, fine, as long as it lasts, anyway, let's be optimistic, you know, it will last my time, yeah, and for the rest, well, we'll do something for the kids, you know, to set them up, and even the grandchildren, we'll save some money for them. In that way, everything's fine. Maybe not. But why am I still not satisfied? Oh yes. My first girlfriend was from Culemborg, somehow or other. I mean, South Africa has a connection with Culemborg. And when she had this accent, she wouldn't say in Dutch for ik means I, right? But she would always say ek, you know, with this Culemborg accent. I'm sure you could have a nice conversation with her. I had a hard time to understand what she was saying. I go, what? Anyway, somehow or other, she was from there, and we tried, and I was in love, you know, like anything at the time. But still, I had these moments that a song started to play in my head, an old song, and the song was, is this all there is? Is this all there is? And I had my moments, you know. I don't know if you ever have that, but I had my moments that I think, like, is this really it? Is this what the whole world has been so excited about? Is this it now? Is this it? There was still some emptiness in my heart. I tried to forget it. I tried everything to sort of like act as if it wasn't there and stay busy, stay busy and have fun, you know. And I tried harder. Yeah, I don't know. I was in the bars and, you know, and social life and, yeah, you know. But I don't know. After a while, that sort of looked a bit, can I say, alcohol. I saw the regulars with their puffy faces and their puffy hands, you know, some red noses and dull brains. And dull brains. I thought, God, you know, I got to get out of this. Sell books and buy beer. I don't know. How long can you do that? You know, how many books can you sell before it starts to get to you? I thought so. Amsterdam, oh Amsterdam, oh Amsterdam. Anyway, I was glad. I went through there, checked it out of curiosity, and to be part of the time. And it was a funny time. There were happenings on Dam Square in Amsterdam. The hippies were meeting there, and some really were taking a few too many substances, which took them way over cloud nine. What can I say? At one point, some of the, you know, I don't know if in Afrikaans they have a word like kabouter. Kabouter. You know what kabouters are? That's great, because the English don't get it. No, really. They don't know what a kabouter is, you know. So, when I try to say a dwarf, kabouters, you know, are like friendly creatures who like gardening. They like gardening. Dwarfs are a little different, you know. They sort of are more into mining. And some of the mean side also, right? So what can I say? Kabouter is different. Anyway, so they had a political party called the Kabouters. The hippie party. And they had all kinds of ideas. They were going to make gardens on the roof of cars. Yeah? This is a thing. Get the grass on, you know, so just so that at least to counteract the carbon monoxide and so on. Yeah? In this way, they were ahead of their time. They were into the environment and... yeah, they had many ideas. What can I say? So I tried to do some idealistic things and so on. But ultimately, yeah, I wasn't fully satisfied. My girlfriend was. She likes the same, like, you know, these... We started to grow apart. I was looking for something deeper, something more, and she didn't. So, didn't work. You know how it is. Found somebody else. What to do? Time was on like that. And the new one, I took to India, right? Overland. I made her get rid of her flat and her apartment and everything and just put her on the bus, you know? And I made a rule also. I made a rule. You can come, but whatever you want to take, you have to carry yourself. You know, just to make sure, you know? So it's like that she was a little renounced, you know what I mean? That she wasn't the super attached type and that she wouldn't get ideas from, you know, I want this and I want that, you know? So like, get him straight away, you know? Anyway, that's how it was. So we traveled and overland to India. It was quite an experience, you know. Dutch people are feisty people, you know, they have some energy. And I remember in Afghanistan, one boy stole her shoe. And she ran after him. And she got him. Right? She got him. So she had the boy, you know. So within no time, there were 100 people around, you know, big drama. And they told her, let the boy go. And she said, no. And, you know, they found someone who spoke English. Right? Came and said, no, he's a thief. He stole my shoes. And he still had the shoe in his hand. You know, so people, what to do now, you know? He's guilty, you know, so according to Islamic law, he had to be punished, right? So, all right, okay, so the people decided, okay, you can punish him, you can beat him with the shoe. And she did. Ah, it was a good journey. But it got good. It got really good in India, because India is a spiritual place. India was a place, it was different. Because in India, well, you could say that the focus of society was something like what was going on in the Middle Ages in Europe. You know what I'm saying? It's like where the time when they were building churches and the time when everyone was so spiritually inclined, that was India. You know, at that time, just amazingly spiritual orientation in society, so predominantly. So it sort of shocked my agnostic position quite a bit, you know, because I'd sort of conclude, my parents were kind of liberal, and they told me, well, if you want to believe in God or not, it's up to you. And I said, but I am only small. So I shelved that one, you know. It was a bit big, a big question, a big theological question for a child. So I shelved it. But I went on my search for meaning. Yes. And there I did. It took quite some time, and I made many trips to India, but eventually I came back with something. With a sense of eternity, a sense that we are an eternal soul and not this temporary body, and that, you know, we don't have soul, it's not we have a soul, no, we are soul and we have a body. And with that, I return now to earth. So yes, we have to live on earth as well. One of the mantras in the Vedic literature, a very famous mantra, is the Gayatri mantra. Gayatri, those who know a little bit about the Vedic culture have heard of the Gayatri mantra. Some even have it on a recording at home, you know. It starts with Om and carries on. But it's a mantra that is supposed to be chanted in the mind. And it connects us with the spiritual reality that is behind everything material. Now it said, the Gayatri Mantra stands on four legs. One leg is for the body. Another leg is for the mind. Another leg is for words, is for speech. And the fourth leg is the earth. So, it must come back to the earth. It must come back to a lifestyle on the earth. So after all this kind of starting off depicting a world of lovers of God, I've come back down to the earth. One thing that always intrigued me, as a kid even, when I read about it, was the sacred cows. You know, I'm from Holland, you know, we have cows everywhere, right? I couldn't figure it out. What is sacred about a cow? You know? I mean, a cow is sort of... they're okay, but they're not like an emblem of sort of great intelligence or... a cow. I couldn't figure it out. What? Why the cow is sacred? But now, in this day and age of the climate change and so on, hey, cows are on the cutting edge. Wait a minute, that's what it's all about. Cow, sacred cow. Oh yes, indeed. Keep your cows. Everything you need, right? Milk, you have your bulls. No need for tractors. Your bulls, bullocks, right? Bullocks can do everything. Bullocks made South Africa what South Africa is today. Yes, it started out with bullocks. Bullocks is actually the natural way to live. And when you have a society which protects cows and bulls, then the land becomes naturally fertilized. Then everything in harmony, instead of a modern approach, which is a society which is at war. Nietzsche is describing in his philosophy that man is living in a hostile universe, and the answer to it is power. But that's the foundation of our society. That's what we do. You know, you have a rumble in your belly, no problem. Throw a nuclear pill on it. Kill everything in there. The good ones and the bad ones. Anyway, too bad, right? No bacteria alive. Anyway, take some probiotics. Millions of good bacteria in a little bottle. Well, there you go. Build it back up. In all directions, put some concrete on the grass. So, get rid of it. Yes, nice, clean concrete. Dress it up with some mirrors, some electricity, some glitter. Dress it up. Looks okay. Automated. Whoo, stainless steel. Whoo, slick. Fast. Moving. Here we are. In war with our environment. Based on Nietzsche. Based on Machiavelli's The Prince, you know. Power. Power is what the modern world is based on. That's our answer on the environment. We try to conquer by power. Not the culture of the Bhagavad Gita. Not the culture of the Vedas. Not the culture of the sacred cow. The culture of the sacred cow takes us back to the land, an honest occupation. Instead of an artificial life, no, the honest life, but truly living off the land, with the land, right? Then should the whole world just farm? That will be hard, because, you know, you have different types. You always have your skinny types, you know. You know, you don't really see them on a plow, right? You know, it's like their hands are sort of designed for a keyboard, you know. How about them, you know? What about the nerds, right? I mean, they have to start farming. Is it going to work? No. But instead of computers, they can read books. Books we can have. And they can study them. And they can be the intellectuals. We need intellectuals. But not a head full of rubbish, but a head full of real knowledge, of beneficial knowledge, you know, of deep wisdom. Oh, some wise people. Let us use intelligence if one can learn a lot. If someone has a big brain and that can contain a lot, let's fill it with wisdom. Why fill it with garbage? Yeah. That's why I dropped out of my education. I said, like, you know, I had it already in primary school, that when at one point I had to learn the geography of Russia, the topography of Russia. And when it came to Dnepropetrovsk, right, I said to myself, this is ridiculous. This is just ridiculous. Why do I have to know where Dnepropetrovsk is? I'm never in my life going to go to Dnepropetrovsk. I don't want to know about Dnepropetrovsk. Sorry, Dnepropetrovsk. All best wishes for Dnepropetrovsk. But I thought, this is too much, right? And oh God, I was struggling with the topography of Russia. Anyway, I drew the map on a wooden wall, and, you know, and wrote the city names and started to throw darts on the map. And that's how I somehow or other learned it and passed the exam. God. Oh, jeez. So I had my doubts. Why do I have to learn all this ballast, all this unnecessary knowledge that has no interest to me whatsoever? What for? I want to fill my brain with wisdom. I want to fill my brain with real knowledge. So let's get practical, down to earth. Let's have a program that is practical. Go back to earth. Let us gradually use computers to get rid of computers, iPads to get rid of iPads, and iPhones to rid the world of iPhones. You know, life is boring since we have a phone. I'm leaving now, you know. I'm halfway, you know. I'm just around the corner, you know. Oh, you know, ring, ring. Oh, here you are, right? Nowadays, if you dare to rock up at someone's door and you didn't call before, they go, why didn't you call? How could you just come to the door? I tell you. But it used to be kind of exciting. You could surprise somebody. Dear children, take it from Grandpa, that once upon a time, there was a world without phones. Yes, and people didn't die. Oh, yes, and everything would go on, really. Yes. People would visit each other. Yes, they did. Yeah. Send a pigeon or something, you know. No, whatever. Life can go on. We can start smoke signals again. Yeah. Whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. It's not that life is so much better now. No. Grandma's herbs. Anybody still knows? Are there still, you know, some last of the Mohicans who still know how to pick some herbs from the forest? Huh? Very few. I mean, I don't. Well, I have no idea. No, wouldn't have a clue, you know what I mean? You send me in a forest, I wouldn't know what to eat. Yeah? And, okay, if you send me in a Dutch forest, the only thing I know that I can eat is stinging nettles. I can test it, you know? They sting? Okay, yeah, can eat stinging nettles. But how long can you eat stinging nettles? I read the biography of Milarepa, the famous Tibetan Buddhist of the 16th century, who ate grass soup for 30 years and turned green. So living on stinging nettles, I wonder what's going to happen. Maybe not my program. No. So, we have lost something. We have gained something. Yeah. We have lost something. I know a lot about a lot of things, but I have no idea about the herbs I can eat. Let us go back. Well, the time will come. We may not do it voluntarily. It may come by force. Maybe sooner, maybe later. Let's see. Anyway, but from the Vedic perspective, once you have a life based on protection of the cow and the bull, based on agriculture, then you have a foundation of society. Then if there are those who have wisdom from scriptures to guide people, a priestly class, who are spiritually strong and examples, then we can have a healthy society. Then if the kings are trained by the priestly class, and the kings become saintly kings, then these kings can guide society. And if the farmers who own the farms don't just think of lining their own pockets, but are ready to be charitable, then the laborers in society are cared for instead of exploited. Then everything would be really, then we would have a fairy tale on earth, an earthly fairy tale, not airy fairy, but practical and real. And in this way, this Vedic knowledge is not just abstract, but has very concrete solutions also for this modern times. I remember the environmental conferences. There was one in Rio, then two in Johannesburg. And I remember in the first one, they came out, so many scientists met, discussed the environment, and the conclusion was, it will only be possible to make a change when people change their mentality, when that selfishness disappears, and people can care for the environment. So, and how can that be attained? The conclusion was, it can only be attained through a spiritual objective. When people have a spiritual objective, can they become selfless? That was right. When in Manila, there was an AIDS conference, the conclusion was that the condom campaign didn't work. I don't know if you have these advertisements in Cape Town. I saw them in Durban, where it said, if you go casual, dress formal. Yeah. Anyway, it didn't work. It didn't work. What can I say? That was the conclusion in Manila. So they said, what to do now? Then they said, the only option is abstinence. Yeah, abstinence, you know what I mean? You know, as we say, in Dutch they say, open houtje bijten, biting a piece of wood. I mean, is that realistic? Can that be done? No. Again, the conclusion in Manila was, abstinence will only be possible if people are deeply absorbed in a spiritual path. Then there can be that motivation. Therefore, really, to solve the issues of the day, We need a spiritual solution. Material solutions. One, two. So see, my talk was both going into the higher spheres and also very practical on the ground. And in that way we can see that we're dealing with a package that makes a lot of sense. And that's what I wanted to present to you. Thank you very much. If you have any reactions, then that would be most welcome. Any comments, any questions, a little discussion can be nice. Speak a little louder, but some of my ears are blocked.
Okay, I have a question. How do you suggest what? Okay, living a spiritual life, but how do you reconcile the fact that we have to still interact materially and make a living?
Yeah, exactly. So we have a spiritual life, and yet we have to reconcile it with our material needs, make a living and all that. Yes. My first objective was sort of to paint an ideal with this lecture, although at the end I brought it down to something practical, but then also an ideal. Right? Now I know reality, it's nice to be idealistic, but then at one point, you know, you have to just live in the world you live in. And, you know, it's nice when I speak about sacred cows and sacred farms and all the and farms where we look at, but, you know, farms cost a lot of money. And so on, and plus farms are oftentimes not safe, and so many issues, you know, with farms also. It's not just so easy these day and age. So what to do? Yes, it's okay. We can work in the world. Of course, some jobs are to be avoided, you know. Particular jobs that cause suffering to other living beings. You know, a friend of mine asked me one day, you know, I've been offered twice the salary that I'm earning now. And then he told me what it was. Weapons. Weapon factory. I told him, don't sell your soul to the devil. Yeah? That's not a good idea, you know. Twice the money for what? You know, weapons are not made for making peace. Why would you be part of making them? Okay. Obviously, you're getting some culpability in that. You know, you're supporting something. Same way, don't become a butcher. So, find a job that ethically is reasonably okay, you know. I mean, you may not find something that's perfect, yeah, but reasonably okay. And then, okay, live, you know, a life as good as you can, and take spiritual principles in a modern life. I also use a computer, right? I got a phone. Even it's on silent now, I hope. I've got an iPad mini, and, you know, and I like it to an extent. I actually still like books better for reading, but okay, it's handy though to carry around. Um, So yes, we live in this world, don't, but walk a path in this world that is sort of spiritually motivated. When you go into the supermarket, you know, it's for you as much as for anybody else, but you can decide what you put in your shopping cart. Right? And it's nice if there is some compassion in your shopping cart. Right? That's a nice principle. Yeah, because compassion is a good quality. Like that, we can live in the modern world, but maintain some spiritual principles. And it's not ideal. For example, we drive cars, and cars are basically aggressive machines. Yeah? I'm sorry to say, but a car is actually aggressive because, first of all, it fumigates the planet. Then, you know, it needs these roads everywhere, and then obviously you kill so many living beings on the way. It needs petrol, and what we don't do for petrol. Right? So, aggressive machines. But what are we going to do about that, you know? We can't just... We live in the world we live in, right? So you can't just avoid everything. But let's at least try and have some spiritual principles and make a living. I'm making a living from being this. That's how I make my living. I don't do anything else for my living, you know. It's like I give talks, I sing anywhere in the world, and some people like it and they give me something, and in that way I'm okay, and I'm even giving away to good causes, so I'm not starving. In fact, you know, I have to watch out that I don't grow overweight when you do this, because part of it is people want to feed you also. You can easily grow fat. So my basic point is, I chose to live this life because I try to live be less compromised, you know? That's why I like it like this. That's why I'm in the dress and the whole thing. I said, well, if I go spiritual, I may as well dress up for it, you know. Yeah. I may as well walk the talk then all the way. Yeah. My point is, it works. It works. It all goes on. So, if we choose for spiritual purity in our life, it will work. Opportunities will be made for us. Something. We're not alone. Spiritual life is not just us, you know, like trying to be spiritual. There's even somebody above there watching it and sort of saying, okay, I'll send you something because you try to live pure. Somebody will look after us. Anyone else? Yeah.
Thank you for the thought-provoking class.
Also, a little loud, I have two blocked ears. It's
Thank
a terrible
thing.
Thank
you for the thought-provoking class. My question is, well, currently we're living in this consumer culture that's almost creating all these artificial needs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, in the meantime, while we're having to interact in the world, until the time comes that we're actually forced to go back to our roots and to live a more natural life, how can we minimize basically our consumerism to the point where it's only really necessary? Because it's so difficult to be in a position where you're not creating harm.
Yes.
You know, it's just simply not practical.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we remain aloof from all these artificial needs that are being implanted?
I think your question is a question which is everybody's question. It's all of us. It's your question, it's my question also. And it's one of the questions I'm keeping in the back of my mind. So I'm trying to have a certain level of simplicity in my life. That my solution is try and keep life somewhat simple, simplify my needs, then makes it easier. Yeah. But we're locked in a world, you know, like where the whole world is part of this. Okay? I mean, you know, what's behind my water, right? Drinking water here, I mean, you know. And I can't drink water straight from a stream, can I? I don't know. I would be scared to try in most streams. Yeah. So it's like the whole we're locked into a system, we've grown dependent on a system. We can't just step out like that, but at least it can minimize our needs. That's my approach. But it's not an answer to your question, because I think the question is a question of all of us. And everyone should for himself sort of see how they deal with that question. And I just give how I deal with that question. Yeah. Looks like we're sort of coming to a saturation point. The point, the enough is enough point. I don't know what the. I know there's going to be some. Coming from the